This is KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Auto. KUSP and KBH are owned and operated by the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation, Incorporated, a nonprofit organization. KUSP and KBH broadcast from studios located at 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. KUSP transmits at 88.9 megahertz with a power of 1,250 watts at a height of 3,750 feet above sea level from Mount Toro near Salinas, California. KDBH transmits at 91.7 megahertz with a power of 2,700 watts at a height of 2,900 feet above mean sea level from Williams Hill near Lockwood, California. KUSP also utilizes studio transmitter link WAH-828 at 95.1 megahertz. KUSP is also heard via the following translators: K212AA Los Gatos at 90.3 megahertz, K207CN Santa Cruz at 89.3 megahertz, K216CL Palo Colorado Canyon at 91.1 megahertz, K290AE Big Sur Valley at 105.9 megahertz, K207DH Carmel Highlands at 89.3 FM, K26BQ Hollister at 89.1 megahertz. Your comments and suggestions and contributions can be addressed to KUSP, P.O. Box 423, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Your NPR member station, this is KUSP, Santa Cruz, and KDBH, San Ardo. Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, September 23rd, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It is time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. KUSP has been off air since 2 o'clock a.m. this morning due to power failure in the local PG&E grid. But we're here. We're back. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz. Today on Geek Speak, we got two geeks in the house, John Tracy, Miles Elam. We're going to be doing news. We're going to be taking your calls. You can get in the queue. Well, soon, when everything powers up. 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, right now you can send email to us. Go to geekspeak.org, send us email. We'll answer those questions. We'll be also going through old emails that are relevant in answering and addressing those as well. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the air with me, geeks, John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning.
Good morning.
We're going to do some news. Miles?
Oh, my. Catching me off guard here. Microsoft to provide Internet Explorer patches for Windows XP only. So if you want to make updates to your browser for security, this includes security vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. but any type of patches, Microsoft basically isn't going to bother with Windows 98 or Windows 95 or any Windows Millennium Edition. All they're going to do is be patching the XP system for the home users.
Wow, okay. So is that really a concern? I mean, is there a problem with the older browsers that you have to be fixed? I mean, are there, if you keep on using the older browser, are you going to be in a bad shape in the future?
Well, I think the amount of security vulnerabilities that we've announced on this show, that we do, what, on a weekly basis, and a good, 75% of those are from the Internet Explorer engine.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for that update. I'm kind of it's kind of a shame that they stopped supporting it. I mean,
Well, it just means that people should be getting things like Firefox or
Opera. I was
going
to say, yeah, the solution, of course, is go ahead and get a free browser for your Windows 98 machine, and you can do that at Mozilla.org. The one we suggest is Firefox, which is a kind of a light version of their full package. Thank you, Miles. John? Oh, you know, I just want to cover one thing. I started the show off by announcing the time as 10, but it's 10:39 a.m., just to let you know.
And anyone who's listening, you are a dedicated KUSP listener.
No kidding. We love you.
You.
Well, it was 8 hours of static, but they're back on now. Okay, in a slightly related story, I have an article that was written by Walter S. Mossberg for PTech, which is an online journal. And he's talking about how to protect yourself from vandals and viruses if you use Windows. His primary recommendation is, of course, to get a Macintosh. It's called the opting out option. He says the single most effective way to avoid viruses, spyware, and the like is simply to chuck the Windows system altogether and buy an Apple Macintosh. So there we go. Everyone just rent out BIOS 10. You'll be fine. Nothing will ever break
good.
Again.
So one journalist suggested that, so the world should change now.
Right.
Thank you, John, very much.
He also then goes on to say, for the rest of us, and then he's got a lot of great stuff about how to halt hackers, computing viruses, stopping spyware. We'll get a link up later. To this article, because it's actually pretty good. He's got a lot of great stuff.
You're just saying that.
Just saying that.
Thank you, John.
And I mean it.
Miles.
Yeah, since everyone missed Democracy Now! This morning on KUSP.
Oh, which I believe will be aired at 3 o'clock today.
Ah, yes. Overseas ISPs are being blocked by the Federal Voting Assistance Program website. This is a website that would allow registered American voters to vote over from abroad. The Pentagon is blaming the risk of hackers as a reason for doing so, but Democrats abroad aren't particularly happy about it. There's a whole lot of backlash having to do with that. So
basically, what services are provided that people can't get to? Voting or information about voting?
I believe this is about information having to do with voting.
Okay, so basically you're abroad, you're trying to find out how to vote, because you are still a U.S. citizen, you should be able to vote in federal elections, and you can't get the information from outside the U.S., this website that serves the need that you have. All right, well, that's bad, and thank you very much for the info. John?
Hubble may be getting a new lease on life. Hubble Space Telescope has been called one of the best scientific tools ever created. It's a telescope currently orbiting Earth. That was scheduled to be decommissioned because the shuttle, which did routine repair and maintenance, refurbishing on the telescope, is not flying right now. So they were thinking, we're not going to have the funding or the ability to keep this running. We're going to let it lapse and, crash it into the atmosphere in a safe way. In January of this year, Hubble did
the Hubble team, I should.
Yeah, the Hubble team, using the Hubble Space Telescope, concluded a four-month survey of this one tiny section of sand. I'm sorry, one tiny section of sky. It's the size of a grain of sand held at arm's length. If you look up at the sky, that's about how big they were looking at. This is called the Hubble Ultra Deep Field Survey. And basically, it's looking back. If you think of, if you're looking out, what mm-hmm. you're seeing is light that's older and older. The further out you look, right. the older the light is. They're looking back about 13 billion years with this telescope right now. This is the time just after what they're calling the Dark Age. There was the Big Bang. This is all theory, by the way. We don't know if this is true. But there was the Big Bang. There was an era of radiation when everything was kind of this uniform glow. Everything cooled. That's called the Dark Age. And then the first stars and first galaxies were supposedly, that's when they were forming. Hubble is looking just a little bit past when the galaxies and stars are supposed to be forming, and it's finding stars and galaxies. It's finding matter that shouldn't be there. So physicists are now having to rethink, well, why is this? Why are we finding these things? Maybe physics worked differently then. Maybe our understanding at the beginning isn't exactly what we thought it was. So they've decided it is imperative that we keep Hubble up and running. So NASA, which has had this contingency plan of building a robot to go up and fix Hubble, is now moved into the from a contingency plan to actually studying it in
and
seriousness.
Fixing it. Uh-huh.
So it's very likely that they will actually go up and fix Hubble.
So Hubble will be up for longer. Not really fix it, but more keep it going.
Maintain it.
Maintain it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, John, for that.
And it's very important because there's a There's a second telescope being developed, but it could be after 2010 before it actually gets up.
So what the idea is to keep it going at least until that telescope comes
ideally,
online.
Yeah.
Great, John. Thank you very much for that. Miles?
A recent bill has been signed into law in California that for peer-to-peer sharing, you must provide an email address. This is
a legal one? I mean, a functioning email address, rather?
I believe that's what the law is saying. It's a really curious thing. This is a bid to stop peer-to-peer file sharing, such as music.
The idea there's some accountability to an email address.
Right.
Except for the fact email addresses that have no accountability at all.
There's that, and I also wonder about, well, peer-to-peer systems, one of the big concerns people have about it is that you're distributing copywritten material illegally.
Yeah.
Now, you sign a law so that you have to have accountability to the illegal actions.
It's like asking drug dealers to please register your business. It's like, yeah, they're not going to. It's illegal.
It's asking drug dealers, well, register your the bongs.
Right.
You have to sell. I mean,
when you sell pot, illegal, please get a phone number. And so this idea of trying to regulate an illegal market is kind of silly.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a legislator, and I don't know the future, how it's going to turn out. It just
Miles, what do you
bit,
think? Do you think it's
odd.
Silly?
I think it's
a bit
silly.
Odd, not silly. Okay, a bit odd. I'll take that.
I think it's useless.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak, truncated show due to power failure. We're online, going to be online for the rest, on air for the rest of the, well, until PG&E kills power again accidentally. That might be when we go off again. You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. A more sure way to get to us right now is going to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Fill out that email form, and we'll get that in our inbox. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services, including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
The California Grey Bears presents a free annual harvest picnic for seniors with a barbecue lunch, refreshments, music, and craft booths on Tuesday, October 5th from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Harvey West Park Evergreen Grove. For information, call 479-1055.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell, the Geeks This Morning, Miles Elam, and John Tracy. We're all standing by taking your calls and emails. Phone numbers 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll answer any technical question you may have, and we might even do it accurately. John, your next item?
We have email.
Well, let's do that.
It's Drew from Felton.
And Drew used our website, geekspeak.org.
Click on the contact button. He says, I would like to be able to back up only files altered in the past 6 months or so. I've tried searching for those files and then copying the search result onto my USB flash memory. So basically, he's looking for a way that he can synchronize files.
Yeah.
Older.
And a simpler kind of by file kind of thing where he manages it.
And he's using Windows XP Pro.
All right. Well, that's interesting because most backup suites do it right from they do the whole thing, and then if they do keep an archive, they look at what you've backed up to. But what basically he wants to do is to a small media that can't take a full copy. He just wants to back up his newer stuff.
He says when he tries to copy from, he generates that list. I select all the files found in the search and then try to copy. It always gives me the copy error message that says, cannot copy file, cannot read from source file or disk.
I would assume then that one of those files has a bad name, and to start selecting subgroups of those, just try one of them from that search window. You should be able to copy from that find window to a drive or to a folder. Another option is to go ahead and put a folder on the desktop and copy all those things to that location and then copy that folder over. But I have a feeling that he's got a bad path name in there. Miles, would you
potentially
agree with that?
He had a CD in. No, it's to be able to copy from that.
I'm thinking it's got a bad file name. I have that on Windows machines every once in a while, a weird file name or a bad unaccessible file. Another thing to do is go to fix your drive, do a scan of your drive or a defrag of your drive will definitely fix things up of that nature. And those tools are all under control panels, and you can get from there. Thank you, John, for filling us in on. And who was that and where from?
Drew in Felton.
In Felton, great. Thank you, Drew, for the email. Miles or John, either of you have a news item for the day?
Go Miles.
Oh my God, everything's going crazy.
Do the one about the book. Do the one about the internet junkies.
Oh, internet junkies. Unfortunately, I don't have that in front of me, but I can.
Just go off
somewhere around. Just
please. Make it up.
Basically, a group made a study of individuals for 14 days, basically not allowing them any type of net access, email, the web, instant messenger, and then checked the results after 2 weeks. And what they found were people that
had... were a bunch of people twitching.
Higher people who very irritable, higher rate of depression, just all the earmarks of... withdrawal.
Wow, from net. Well, we kind of felt that this morning when we got here and there was no power here. We didn't have net access. It felt a little strange.
Yeah, I told Lyle, you know, you took me from my nice, comfy home where I was basking in wireless to this place where there's no connectivity.
But something that Maggie and I were discussing also was what happens if you have people who are avid gardeners that every morning they go out and do the pruning or whatnot. What happens if for 2 weeks you take them away from that? They're not allowed to work on their garden.
Same thing.
Well, would it be? I don't know. I'm curious if someone does a research
I'm going to take my own personal opinion here and just say that we're habitual creatures. And when a habit gets formed,
if you break it,
you notice it. Your mind is ready to do that and isn't. And our producer, Maggie, informs me that, yes, that's true. Yes, it's a problem for her if she's not gardening when other people are or after she's gardened for a long time. The phone numbers are open. Taking your calls, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Seeing that KSP went off air and the station lost all its power, the reason it went off air, what do people do to protect their computers from power outages? What's good methods to make sure your computer is going to come back up after a power outage?
Well, the first thing to do is to make sure it goes down gently, as gently as possible.
Don't drop it.
When the power goes out, or fluctuates, the best thing to have is an uninterruptible power supply, which is a big battery. They're becoming much more prevalent in homes now, especially up in the mountains. It's a must-have. It can not only keep your computer going for a few minutes after the power goes out and give you enough time to shut it, save your work and shut it down. It also protects against brownouts, which can do serious damage to computers, because a lot of times you don't notice a brownout happening, but your computer certainly does, which can corrupt data, things like that. It also helps level out spikes because it's got a battery, so it can store power.
Mm-hmm.
So if a
spike
spikes can help
surge protection.
It'll act as a dampener.
Yeah, it is a really great thing to have on there, and of course the safety the shutting down safely thing aspect from it is great. Let's say you're copying a file or doing something on the machine when the power goes out, your machine stays up for 5 minutes, so you can go ahead and tell it to shut down and stuff.
Another thing is actually getting software that automatically will shut the system down. In other words. It'll say you have a message that pops up. This comes with a lot of the newer UPSs, actually UPSs for the last 10 years,
yeah.
I guess, that they'll pop up a message on your desktop saying, the power's out. Do you want me to shut down? And then have a timer on there saying, I'm going to shut down
so
in 5 minutes.
If you're taking a shower while you're downloading your email and the power goes out, you don't know.
Because most people just leave their computers on, just turn the monitor off.
Yeah.
This is something that can actually just safely power the system down.
Right. Good thing to have. You know, the other thing about UPS having it in your home, especially if you're in the mountains, you lose your power. So let's say you're not even on your computer, and all of a sudden the power gets lost. And what will happen with UPS is when it detects a power outage, when it's on, is it'll start beeping because it's going, hey, you know, I've got no power and I'm starting to use my battery. Well, what you can do is you can take that UPS, you can unplug your computer from it because your computer's off now anyway, or if you've powered it off. Take that into your kitchen and plug in a light, or I wouldn't run a toaster oven on it, but you could definitely grind your coffee beans. There's some things you can do with this power source that you have. It's very convenient.
We have one hooked up to our TiVo. So even though if we can't watch TV, it's still recording all of our shows for us.
Oh, that's nice.
Although it should be noted that if you drop a UPS, most UPSs, down to where they have no power anymore, drop them down to zero, and then charge them back up again, you will shorten the life of that UPS.
So it's designed to be... fully charged.
It's designed to be fully charged, and that gives you that 5 minutes to shut down, not for necessarily running it for 30 minutes every single time. If you do it once, no biggie. But I'm talking about it. This is habitual, where the power goes out and you're running it until you absolutely have to, 30 minutes later, after you're going, well, I don't know if the power's going to come back on or not. That's a way to shorten its life dramatically.
The other thing about UPS is, and I would assume this would be a good way to go, if you've powered down your machine, you should probably power off your UPS, right? Because if you keep it on, the machine's off, and then you go out for the day and the power gets lost, you're going to slowly trickle down that UPS until it's out, just powering the ghost power, if you will, on your systems.
It depends upon the UPS. A lot of UPS.
Some have no draw, they turn off.
Well, I'm sure they do just from their activity lights or just the light that's on there. But at the same time, just keeping an LED lit, I'm sure it could do for days.
Yeah, right, of course. Homes no power.
Because it has no power compared to a computer.
Great. You're listening to Geek Speak. John, Miles are here with me. News? Items, sir?
I've got an older email from Ann Pace.
Yeah, about wireless.
Yeah, she sent in a pretty common question that I hear, which was she has a wireless network that she's trying to set up at home. She's used a couple of different routers.
D-Link and a Netgear.
And a Netgear, which, you know, two of the big major names in wireless routers. Both systems work when the laptop was sitting next to the router, but it cut out when it moved to another room. It was also very slow for the moment or two that it did work. So she's wondering what can cause this.
Lots of things. Microwave usage.
Microwave usage. Yeah.
Some portable phones.
What happens is there's two different. Well, okay, there's three, but there's two major flavors of wireless. There's 802.11b and g, which work on the same frequency as your microwave and as your cell phone. I'm sorry, as your wireless, most wireless phones in the home. So if you have a wireless phone and you have a microwave and you have a Wi-Fi network, all three are trying to share that same radio space, that same bandwidth. So what can happen is a lot of times they will start trying to talk over each other, or the microwave will cause interference, or the phones will cause interference. So a lot of times that can create a bad signal or a bad link. Other things that can happen. Iron railings are a great preventer of wireless. They just seem to be able to block the signal because the signal is a wave. The iron railing is spaced in such a way that it makes a very good block for the wave.
Yeah, any kind of metal gridding will really take it down.
Exactly.
That's why it's actually why cement buildings are pretty good deterrents, if you will, for wireless. It's not actually the concrete. The concrete's not that big a deal. It's the iron inside the concrete that really does it.
So some of our suggestions were, first, I wanted to make sure she wasn't on a Mac, because Macs have an internal antenna, and if you don't hook up the internal antenna, it can't really see anything. So that wasn't the problem. She's using a PC laptop. I don't normally endorse a product on the show, but...
But you happen to love...
But I happen to love this Netgear wireless router. It's the WGT 624, and it's the best wireless router I've ever seen. It'll hit every place in our house at a good signal strength. I got a little shed that's about 20 or 30 feet away from the house that I do my work in. It full strength signal there. The little fort that my son has in the backyard, good signal strength there. The garden that's way up on the hill, I got okay signal strength there. If I want to go pick blackberries way off in the property, I get a not-so-good signal. But anyway.
Don't bring your laptop to pick blackberries. Blackberries use stains like laptops.
I know.
Yeah, okay. So basically, you recommend this product because you like it, and it's the Netgear what?
It's the Netgear WGT 624, and it's version 2.
Special announcement from KOSP. The Board of Directors of KOSP and the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation meets monthly, and the public is invited to attend. This month, the meeting is on Monday evening, September 27th, beginning at 6 o'clock at the KOSP Studios, 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Call the station during business hours for more information. Our numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877.
KOSP is your station. It's a nonprofit public radio station. All of us are volunteers on GeekSpeak, enjoying the company of us and the calls and emails from you every week at 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. We're here for you. To answer your calls and questions, the phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We can fit one more in if you call now.
I laughed, though, when earlier you were talking about how PG&E accidentally cut the power, or we were out.
Well, we're not sure how it went off.
Maybe
the squirrel got fried.
Now, see, I was thinking it would be much better if we said, no, actually, KOSP, Community Oriented, is showing solidarity to Southeast America, where they've had the hurricanes and power outages and all sorts of problems. We're just, you know, showing our sympathies.
No, we're not.
But that's not the case. The case is that we have power failure. Now, of course, KOSP is open. I mean, people could come down. And, in fact, they can come down to our board meeting to participate in their and our nonprofit radio station, KOSP. John.
Yes,
sir.
Yes.
Your wireless solution at your house is 802.11.
B.
B and G?
G. Yeah,
it's
G and B.
And G and B. Okay.
The other one is A, which doesn't have as much market penetration, but in a lot of ways is a better wireless
It's one of those things that first standard. To market kind of defined the default.
Like the beta, you know, the whole Betamax
right.
thing way back in the...
Back gosh, in the day.
When was that? Yeah, I won't say what year that was. I'll date myself.
Miles, we've been working on a we'll just address something that's kind of on minds, or on my mind, maybe your mind. We've been working on a system called Plone, which goes off of...
Can you spell that?
Yeah.
P-L-O-N-E.
It's a content management system on top of Zope.
Well, it's an environment on top of the content management framework of Zope.
All right. Tell me a little bit about how it works. What's Jython? Or what's Python, rather?
Python is a scripting language that is somewhat object-oriented, somewhat... You can use it basically any way you want to. It's fairly simple, very easy to learn. And Plone basically is using this framework to make a system that adding new content, removing content, editing it, putting it through a workflow was extremely easy. I mean, we only had about, 3 weeks
yeah.
to work on this. And from me, or actually, no, I guess we had less than that because I was looking at what the options were.
Yeah,
this is
right.
the one I figured would take us the least amount of time. And it looks like, yes, this was something that we got up very quickly.
And, of course, it's not necessarily supported by all ISPs, but it is there.
Yeah. If you have your own server or if you find a server that supports it, I highly recommend it.
Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Our geeks today were John Tracy and Miles Elam. Thank you all for your participation. For the emails that came in, thank you for making Geek Speak what it is. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Ardo. We're on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is Open Road, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps and Blues. And right now, a little bit of NPR. I'm Lyle Troxell for KUSP.
Iraqi police say 4 people were killed and 14 wounded when a mortar landed on a major Baghdad street. In addition, Iraqi and Egyptian officials say 6 Egyptians were kidnapped in 2 separate abductions. NPR's Peter Kenyon has more from the Iraqi capital.
Witnesses said the mortar landed in a busy square on Palestine Street in Baghdad. Police said it was evidently fired by insurgents, but they weren't sure what the intended target may have been. An Egyptian embassy official and the Iraqi Interior Ministry said 2 Egyptians were seized from their Baghdad office by armed kidnappers. The officials also said another 4 Egyptians were abducted.